Guys, then might as well get started. Guess I can make introductory remarks. I see Don out there at the table, so. All right, I'm showing it's 10:02. We're going to start our meeting of the TCEQ Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee meeting. And I believe we have two absent. That would be, for the record, that would be Rob and Eddie, Rob Castor and Eddie Arnold. We're not with us today. Rob said he possibly could come, so he might show up a little later. Thank you. I will make my open comment as we always. Everybody knows me? Oh, excuse me. Thank you. Well, it's both sides here. All right. Just wanted to make some opening comments as I tend to do every meeting, and I want to do this for the public for the record also, and just acknowledge that we our authority is we don't have authority. It's only to advise the committee. So that's just stated for the record, and we recognize that. But we have. Some issues that we want to get to today, but any general comments from the committee members before we get into or go down the agenda? I want to comment on the public comments. We welcome public comments, but of course, as noted on the agenda, within a reasonable time, because we do need to get through our agenda items, but we do welcome comments. Anything that's within the purview of our committee, and we would appreciate that if we don't take too many tangents that has nothing to do with our authority or our discussion. So with that, I would like to we did, and I thank the staff for sending us the minutes of the March 26th meeting. They emailed it to us, so we were able to at least take a read of that before we got to today's meeting. Do we have any discussions or a motion on the minutes? Do I have a motion to approve?
Question?
Sure.
Would it make sense for what we adopted in a part of a resolution to be reflected in the minutes, the actual language?
I'm open for discussion on that. I guess it very well could be. Since that was a major part of our meeting, that does make sense.
In other words, right now, if somebody went to the website and went to the advisory committee, they wouldn't actually, what we adopted wouldn't be reflected. Is that true?
Well, it wouldn't be in the minutes, but if you had a cover version of that, every time there's a document referred to, they're highlighted, and on the webpage, you would just click on that highlight and get the document.
Okay, so
on the resolution, you would get Don's version of it, and then you would get the modified version with the highlighted changes in it.
So where it says a motion was made to adopt the therefore section of the resolution, you would click on that resolution, the resolution.
Right, it would be highlighted and that would open up for you.
Oh. I don't know how.
I'm still open to putting in the actual motion if you want.
I'm not sure it's that huge a deal if they have it and they're saying that the resolution, that what we get it adopted becomes a part of the minutes by attachment. That's the best way for the staff to administer it. I don't have a big problem with it. For me, as a practice, it seems to make sense to have in the resolution the text of what we agree upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a good solution would be to, whenever we do a hyperlink and it kind of is incorporating an agreement of the committee, we maybe use a parenthetical that says attached. And then for minutes packages, we go ahead and distribute the hard copy so we avoid this question of a black and white copy and we don't know whether it's part of it and it's clearly attached. So I think the way that's a great idea for hyperlinking documents. I think that's a really efficient use. But for just the purposes of our deliberations, I think you're right. We probably ought to have a hard minutes package that includes the attachments. It might not be.
Maybe our motion should be contingent on the staff copying and pasting the actual motion into the minutes.
I mean, like when I printed the minutes out to look at it, I would expect to see in them somewhere in here, so it needs to be an attachment or needs to be an attachment, wherever, I don't care, but see somewhere, this is what we did.
So could we make a motion to adopt these minutes with the change that the resolution that we agreed to would be attached as an attached document?
I think that works.
Okay, yeah. Then I'll make that motion.
All right.
Does that work for staff? Does that work for you guys? Is that?
Would the same be true for the Part A list?
Yeah.
So maybe we could open up the motion to include any documents that are hyperlinked in the minutes package.
Should be attached to the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Do we have a second for that
amended motion? I'll second that amended motion.
All right. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those against say no. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, there's one point of indulgence, if I may. Is it appropriate right now just to thank the staff for the work they do on this, especially given my request a couple meetings ago to make them do it instead of instead of doing it? I want to thank you all for the good work that you do on this and the support.
It does make our life easier. All right. Well, I have the bylaws on the agenda, and partly because, as you know, as we vote, there's some part of the bylaws. There's a, for example, when we speak, there's one place that says you are to rise and speak. There's another place that about voting, we have to have a roll call vote, and I was hoping to make that a little bit less formal. But I'm open to discussion from the committee if you prefer to leave it as is. But just keep in mind we're really not functioning actually according to the bylaws the way we're doing it now. And I had some revisions, and I don't want to get too technical on this, but for example, Article 1, Section 1, it seems we should, it says provide guidelines to. We're an advisory committee, and I was just thinking we should advise. But I don't want to, the main point, again, that I suggest we change is Article 5, Section 1. The section on rising, I think I deleted that.
Mm-hmm. Should we take out the part about waiting until the preceding speaker finishes also? Just kidding.
We had a court reporter. I can assure you she would have recommended that.
Do we have any concerns? Or maybe I'm the only one. If I'm the only one, y'all could just brush me off and we can just go on. I'm sorry, I just brought my marked version. I should have given you one, but...
Well, Bob, do you have a list of changes you want to recommend?
We can talk about it next time if you want.
I would say the only area that I've looked at so far that I think doesn't make sense to make of what you have here would maybe in the area of voting, it would make sense to say... to acknowledge a general voice or show of hands unless there's a division, unless, you know, we're not unanimous. And then I think roll call vote really just speaks to what the minutes need to reflect. And I think it's instructive in the minutes to know not just seven voted one way and two voted another way and two abstained, but know who those are and have a record of that.
Okay.
I think that's instructive. I mean, if I was the... I may have a different thing here. Oh, shoot. You're already ahead of me. I'm fine with this.
Let's go with it.
I'd say let's do it. Sorry.
Okay. Then,
thanks.
Then would it be simpler for us to... All the changes are just specific ones?
You guys are still...
You've got three changes, right?
Right. And I don't care about the first one. I mean, that's... Here or there.
No, I think it's correct. I think we're all here to advise.
I'll move all of them.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Now, I don't want to rush this through too quickly. All right. Then we'll call a vote. Those in favor?
Just one thing, and it's just grammatical. Okay. In Article 5, obtaining the floor, just as it's currently reads, its members who wish to obtain the floor shall wait until the preceding speaker has finished address the presiding officer.
Addressing, you're right.
Yeah.
It did say rise and address, I think.
Right.
So, okay. Okay, thank you. We'll change that to addressing. Any other discussion or comments from staff? All right, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion passes. Now we can conduct our business according to the bylaws.
Bob?
All right, yes.
There were a number of, in the minutes we just passed, there were a number of action items where staff was going to come back to us. Are you anticipating that they'll come back to us as part of this discussion we're about to have, or those are, you know, staff to consider inclusion of SIC codes and corpuses in the cap? That's something we're going to cover now, right?
Yes, I think so.
Staff to consider newly proposed rules related to oil and gas facilities. That may be an ongoing discussion. So they should all be incorporated in our discussion, what we ask staff to come.
Right. I think so. Is staff prepared to address these action items today? Okay. All right. Yes. Thanks for clarifying that. All right, with that, we'll jump right into the cap, and I'll leave it open for discussion. Whoever wants to go first.
I mean, have people had a chance to look at what Rob prepared? I just printed out this morning, I'll admit. He sent out Friday.
I think it's basically the same thing. He just put some clarifiers in it.
Yeah, that's also my understanding. It's the same as what he sent. I had one question on the third page of this. When you refer to PR equation, were you referring to equation? Which equation are you referring to? This is on the third page. He's not here. Does anybody understand what he meant by?
Are you talking about equation four, or which?
Well, I want to know what he meant by PR.
In the last paragraph.
Oh.
Because that sentence to me, if it's what I, to me it doesn't make sense.
He's referring back to the equation in option two.
That's correct.
Right. So, in the equation in option two, PR is defined as, on the bottom, capital cost of the comparable old property without pollution control. So, if the old property doesn't exist, then it's zero, I think is what he's trying to say.
Okay, okay. I was looking at the wrong equation.
Yeah. But he's not, is are other people's understanding, he's not giving his opinion on whether these are good options or not. He's just saying it's mathematically incorrect and needs to be clarified. Right?
Those of you who didn't get calculus, tell us what that means, what's incorrect.
There's one that was the way it was typed because it was not an equation. 100 was seems to be along with the top equation, right? 100 multiplied by the whole fraction to make it into a percent. So after you calculate, you have your fraction and you have to convert it to percent multiplied by 100. I think he thought 100 was inside or something like that. So it was a typo or something like that. So well, that's another one of the issues that he corrected.
Yeah, I mean, he was corrected. It was looked wrong the way it was printed.
Yeah.
Don, did you get that? That's option one. Option one.
The 100% the numerator, is the top line.
Everything above the line, that 100 shouldn't be in the top line. It should be, that whole calculation should be multiplied by 100, not just the top line, because it looks like it's just 100 times the net present value.
And it looks like some of you know how. I may have you give you a copy of what we gave you last time.
Emmanuel, what you're passing out is the same as this, what we had earlier, right?
Yeah, we just put it
same as this.
Yeah, it's the same principle. While I'm here, I just want to correct that the issue we are having, we have a main issue. The issue is how do we have equation that will be able to calculate every equipment that comes to us. And we do realize that those equations are not applicable to every equipment, and that is the challenge we face, and that is the issues we are dealing with. Yeah, I know that there's a mathematical issue, but it's not a mathematical issue. It's a way to calculate each one consistently, each a group of categories, because some of the equipment we have that are coming to us, they vary in their function. Some are process equipment being used as pollution control. And some have pollution control aspect of it that is integrated with it. So these are the issues that we are facing.
I don't want to misstate what you're saying, but it seems like we're moving toward a kind of a one-size-fits-all type of formula. And that's the struggle we're having. It doesn't fit every property, and I think we know that, and we're trying to align that with the new G1, is it, that talks about uniform and consistent.
Mm-hmm. have any issues that's forward of this. Right, this isn't the current format, is it?
Don, do you have the floor? So I'm confused what we're talking right now about.
Go ahead, Leo.
I was just going to ask. What?
No, I was just getting some insight from someone who understands this better than I do, much more than I do. So he agrees with Rob's analysis on the changes under option one. But option one is, and I think y'all do too, right?
Can you repeat your question again?
Y'all agree with Rob's analysis of option one?
Yeah, I think we agree with the analysis he did there. It was we have 100 outside and
sure.
T or N to me doesn't matter depending on how you use it, but it's okay. Like I said earlier, the issue we have is not a mathematical right now. It's how is the equation fit everything?
Yeah, there were some typo errors basically because, I mean, in the option two that Rob was talking about, the T and the N,
right.
If you look on the handout that he just sent out, the T and N are reversed on this one, on number three, on the option three. They're just the opposite. So it's just a matter of just the typo stuff. I mean, that's he was just pointing that out, I think, Rob, just from a clerical standpoint.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess what we're trying to do here is decide between option one, option two, or believing in option three, the current procedure, and or a fourth option that we don't know of yet, right?
Correct. I think we have the flexibility, not that we're necessarily going to decide today, but we have the flexibility to come up with our own advice.
At the risk of sounding like a broken record once again, is there any potential that we could take or make up some case studies and run them through different options, which would then give us, we'd be able to compare? I mean, we might even be able to say, you know, there may be cases where option two makes sense, and there may be cases, I know we want to get to one formula, but, you know, I think if we had some real-world examples, it might help us. And I don't know if that's possible, or we could generate them. We could say, let's take these three examples and run them through. And if Mike has an option that he's looking at, we could run it through that, and that would at least give us an... I mean, it's really hard for me to look at mathematical formulas, given that I took linear algebra and calculus about 20 years ago. You know, I mean...
Yeah.
Right. 25. Let's see, 1980s. Or whenever it was. Yeah.
I would just ask to remind everybody to please turn your microphone on when you speak so we can get the recording. I was oblivious to that, so anyway.
Well, I think it is a good idea, and I think that, you know, since Robert's not here, he can't explain further. I think his analysis kind of stands on its own merit, but one concern I have, and I'm sensing the staff may share just the fundamental issue of, you know, getting a one-size-fits-all equation is not easy. In fact, I would submit it looks like it might be impossible. I've heard a lot of discussions within the regulated community about how the equation just cannot fit all comers, and it will create disincentives for things. It's not a word, but I like to use it. Disincentives for things that we would want to encourage. It would not fit certain situations. I don't know what's constructive to move forward, Mr. Chair, but maybe we could have a discussion of how the current cap and even the proposed fixes leave out or create practical problems when they're applied to everything. And maybe we could get to a place as a committee that, you know, we're not going to come up. We could spend three meetings going through hypotheticals. We're not going to come up with a single equation. And we need to kind of question, I guess, the underlying premise that we need a single equation. Because I certainly do not believe the legislation mandated that the commission have an equation, that it be published, and that it applied across the board. I mean, uniform and consistency, standards and methods are words that I think this legislature has handed down to the commission. It's also handed down the appointment of this committee, and I would think it would be entirely appropriate for this committee to be used by the commission to come up with a practical
realization that maybe there are some categorical parts of the types of applications you guys get that you'll apply a different equation to. Maybe that's where we should be going. Or maybe the commission just needs to have the engineering, the discretion to live by the statutory mandate of consistency, but without being able to perfect this widget that we seem to be struggling so much for. Because I mean, so Mr. Chair, maybe the first step would be, is there agreement that this, that the cap and the proposed amendments create practical problems for different situations, and so that this goal that one size is going to fit all is just really an unattainable goal? And so we could be thinking about alternative ways to skin the cat.
I think it might be helpful to, if to the extent, not that we take too much time, but point out some of the flaws that you're talking about, how it does not fit in different situations. So, and I've heard some of these examples, but and I think it'd be worthwhile to talk about it, but I hear your concern and your opinion that we are not necessarily required by the legislation to have one formula to fit all.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I've been looking at this, and I really, I thought the old equation was basically good, and this option one, it certainly fixes some of the problems with it. I'm in agreement that you're probably never going to have a one-size-fits-all, but I think we could agree that something that fits most, and maybe some suggestion on if a particular, and I haven't heard all the cases that where this doesn't work, but have the option in there that if somebody can explain sufficiently why this equation doesn't work in a particular instance, that this, that could be sidestepped and something else used.
Well, I think we just, one example would be, like we talked a little bit this morning on, is if you have a sulfur and it's at, I don't know, $80 a ton, and you apply for an exemption, you'd get a small percentage. And the next year sulfur prices went to zero, then you could apply for the same exemption and get 100% exemption. And that's a prime example right there, to where it just depends on the economics of the market. And if, let's say, you got a small exemption one year because and the next year the prices went down, you could reapply and get a greater exemption. So, I mean, you could keep doing this until you got to where you needed to be. I mean, it goes both ways.
Well, in the end, if it goes the other way, then you would have to, then you would have to have something where it's reviewed, because once it's instituted, it would never go backwards.
Exactly.
And
that's a problem. I mean, that's a big problem.
But shouldn't the value, when it fluctuates, when the product value fluctuates, shouldn't that be taken care of in the appraisal end?
I concur. It has nothing to do with this exemption. The exemption should be based on pollution control, not, I'm with you.
I agree with you on that one.
Mr. Chairman, can we, I'd be interested to hear from the staff, council, whether they feel like the bill binds them to one equation, or whether our recommendation that two or three is something that they could live with. Because I'm worried that we could say two or three is preferable, but legal counsel may just say, you know, our interpretation of this bill is that uniformity means one equation. So is there anybody, can we
just get a
feel for how open you all are on that issue, or is it something that you're going to have to decide as a legal matter, and we're not helpful to you in that regard?
Tim Reedy, TCEQ Environmental Law Division. No, I don't believe there would be any problem with multiple equations. I mean, the call in 3206 and 3544 was for uniformity of processing, but however, as this committee discussed, if there were certain categories of equipment where one equation made more sense than another equation, or there were two or three that could be pared down and then processed in a uniform manner, I don't think we'd have any objection to that.
What about if we suggested, say we have this one equation, but anything done with a partial equation has to be reviewed every 5 years or something?
Again, I think, you know, suggestions like that, that's at the discretion of this committee as to how you guys think it would be the best way to deal with it.
Isn't everything reviewed every 3 years?
No. Once you have an exemption, it's there forever unless the property changes hands.
Talking about applications, you're talking about
rules.
Once you get a determination, it's there until it changes owners, and then they have to reapply.
Is that so? When it changes ownership, you have to reapply?
I've never seen that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in the tax law, actually.
Or changes use.
I mean, I think the law provides some protections. I think it would be ill-advised to have a mandatory review of existing determinations. Not only do I think the law already has a cure for that issue with the use and the change of ownership, but also I just think that would be an overwhelming burden on the staff to accomplish. And I think that you would not be surprised to hear that on behalf of taxpayers, we will not be supportive of that type of proposal. It will be extremely burdensome on taxpayers and the staff. And I don't think there's a list of horribles to explain why we would do that.
Well, you know, having said that, I wouldn't say I completely disagree with you at all. There might be a way to address it. It does seem that it has been a flaw of the program from some perspectives, that there's no capacity to review the exemptions once they're given. We have examples of exemptions that were granted and then there was a recognition, I think, that we all that work on this agree with, hey, that exemption was wrong. And the rule was shut down from that perspective, and you can't get an exemption for the same type of property anymore. And you have one participant in the open market with the exemption for property. It can't be reviewed. It continues with that exemption, and its competitors continue with no ability to get that exemption. So we know that it has happened, and then we think that's a flaw. At the same time, I understand what you're saying, and I understand that it was it's a flaw we all swallowed at the beginning of this program. From our perspective, we're not sure it doesn't make sense to review that, but I'm not sure that that's possible without some legislative interaction in it. So I kind of agree with you and disagree with you at the same time.
Somewhat related question, but more of a mathematical question, which is whether you used option one or option two on this marketable product value concept, the number of years you would be projecting into the future would be based upon the life of the equipment. So you'd be saying over the next 10 years, we think sulfur prices are going to be this amount, or because you're basically adding a value each year and projecting to the future. Is that what you're doing on what the marketable value of this, if you have a byproduct, for example, is that what you're doing?
To tell you the truth, I think when we put that equation together, we were just trying to put it for you all to look at what we were thinking. We haven't actually looking at every variables and what effect it will have and all that. So you can use that as a life of equipment, and you can redefine it as the way you can make it work. Did I answer your question?
I'm not sure. So, but the equations as they are right here, you would be taking several years, projecting several years into the future on what the marketable value of that product would be.
Yeah, for number one, yes.
But would that be 2 years or 10 years or 20 years, or you don't know yet?
We don't have, that's what I'm saying. We haven't even thought through all this yet.
Okay.
We just provided, remember the first time we had a meeting, you said, hey, give us what you are thinking. And the equation we gave you was what we were thinking at that time. Just to give you, you know, going what we're thinking about. So we haven't actually given any thorough thought on how this will work with each equipment, like I said earlier, and what he's going to do. And that's why we're depending on you to give us, maybe you may have some suggestion for us.
Do you envision having a very discount rate based on different risk of the different industries? Or have you thought through that, or that could complicate things?
Well, the only issue we haven't gone through all, because this is kind of, it's not easy, because why it's not easy is because most of the process design today, and you all agree with me, it's not what it used to be in the 90s where you have a discrete pollution control and all that. It's not. Most engineers today are designing a process. You are including your pollution control, your safety equipment into a process. So the situation we are facing is, how do you separate this safety, pollution control, and process? How do you separate them? They're all integrated. Sometimes one equipment, you can use one equipment to do pollution control. And you can turn that the same equipment and put it somewhere in the process, and you'll be doing something different. How do we differentiate them? And that is the issue.
And I understand that. I mean, because basically that calculation that Roland and I were talking about doesn't address any of that. It just addresses the economics of whatever that byproduct or whatever you want to call it is. It doesn't say you could have actually a piece of equipment that reduced your NOx or SOx output by 75%, and by putting it into this equation, you would bypass that, because that would never be part of the calculation, and that would be the result of putting this piece of equipment in. Even though, because I mean, if you look at the equipment and you don't have the blinders on, if you took this formula and you took out environmental rule, environmental benefit, and you didn't have all the precursories that went up to getting to this formula, and you looked at just that formula, it has nothing to do with pollution control. What you're talking about is zero. It's your qualification getting to that point in order to make it fit into that formula is what deems it to be environmental. It's everything leading up to the formula, and the formula is just a way to derive something.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. I mean,
okay.
And I'm sorry, but on option two, your annual marketable product value, how are you determining what your annual marketable product value would be? Is that sort of, is that a guesstimate over the 10 years, what the, or is it a one?
Well, let's say the principle, let me explain, the principle behind that second equation was, it's almost the same variable as the first equation. The only difference is that you are not looking at net present value, you are looking at the average annually, what you are looking at average annually. You can define there and say, hey, look, my annual income of 3 years minus my operating cost of 3 years average, and make it your annual average there if you want to do that. But we haven't even given a thought of how we are going to average, how we're going to do this number mean.
Again, the problem is, Cyrus, every situation dictates, you know, and not knowing what the application of the equipment is at the time that it's being put in and what you're benching it against, it can come up with 100 different answers. And, you know, we keep talking about the valuation of a byproduct or marketable product. Again, to me, that, you know, we should be talking about the reduction in pollution or the prevention of pollution, not necessarily a valuation issue. What Roland and I were talking about, that can be done on the valuation side, not on the exemption side.
Cyrus, as far as byproducts calculated now, it's the last 3 years averaged, and then that number is used for the next life of the property. It's not redetermined for each year.
So in other words, when the application comes in, you look at their last 3 years of data, or?
Well, that's what they provide. That's the number they're supposed to use, the last three, actually. Three data for the last 3 years.
But what if it's a new facility and they don't know?
Unless you're a brand new refinery, a brand new company, you would have those numbers from the other refineries. And sulfur is pretty much the same across the country.
So are you asking if it's, Cyrus, if it's a greenfield project? If it's a new plant and you don't have any history on that plant, then you would use comparable properties? Is that what you're saying, Ron?
For the sulfur, yes, you would.
Okay.
I hate to muddy the water even further, but one of the things these equations come back to is how long does it take to pay back the original cost of the property? Now, the one I had to calculate, it was a very short period of, it was like a 3-year payback, but that was an extreme case.
I understand that question. I just don't, if it was 100% pollution control piece of equipment and it did have a payback, what does that have to do with, if it's 100% pollution control and it had a payback, what would it matter?
Well, I would consider something that pays for itself in a short period of time production equipment, even if it has it produces less pollution, it's making you money. That's production equipment. You can twist all kinds of things into making them look like or say that they're pollution control, but you put them in there to make money, and I'm sorry, that's
But what I'm saying is, if you go through the steps that the TCEQ has outlined in that flow chart, then it would be, you, in order to get to that point, you would have to say that it's already pollution control equipment. I understand what you're saying. You could put something in and say it's making money and to go for some partial exemption. But I'm saying if you went through the checks and balances of what's in this stuff, then in order to get to that point, then you would have to already deem it as being required environmental benefit and going through like each step to get you there. Then it's just a matter of determination of what is that percent of actual pollution control equipment. And I understand that if there's a production benefit and you're doing something like, there was a question about at the last meeting where you had some outfall or VOCs that were going and you're recapturing some product and putting it back into the stream, then that portion that you're putting back into the stream to keep it going from the flare, you shouldn't get an exemption for that. That's increasing your output. I agree 100% there. But if it's something that's going to the ground and you're doing something to capture it and keeping it going to a landfill, I don't understand. You know, if it's preventing pollution or controlling it, you know, whether you're making something off of it, at the end of the day, to me, it is what it is.
You know, one thing that might be very helpful to do just to move forward, because I sense that we will be identifying examples all day long, and there's nothing wrong with that, we can do that if you guys want, but is I kind of step back often and say, what's the problem we're trying to fix? And it would be good if we knew, you know, what is the unique set of applications or categories of applications that the staff thinks are the highest priority. I mean, we've already been through one category of application that we knew was a high priority item, and I think we've made it through that. And it seems like a lot of the discussion about this equation is driven by another category. And so maybe we could talk about how we can fix that category. Ideas, brainstorm. We came up with a solution last time as a committee that I think voted unanimously. Maybe we could go after that. So, because, you know, this marketable product thing, I've already been on the record. I just think that trying to cut with a blunt instrument is going to do real violence to recycling initiatives. If we were to take a scalpel and fix the problem that we're actually aiming for, and if it's heat recovery steam generators, let's get that on the table and let's talk about it.
So are you suggesting having the staff identify to us the types of applications the current cap does not, they don't know how to handle through the current cap?
And yeah, and what exactly, and some ideas they have for fixing it. This kind of goes to what Cyrus is saying too about case examples.
That was exactly my point. I'd like to see if we were, you know, we've already had whatever the 32 heat recovery units that all use different formulas, which is how we got into 3206 in the first place. If we could take one or two of them as an example, because they've already been decided, and just apply these different formulas, and then maybe we take something like a refinery that has sulfur recovery and apply it to these, and that would give us an idea of whether we come up with reasonable numbers. Just like Rob said in an example, you know, 46%, that's a reasonable number, but minus 2% probably isn't, right? You know, if you right. Do the formulas wrong. But if we could, but I don't know if there are other categories besides those two.
It does seem at a minimum part of our problem is capital cost old, which was in their original, the staff's original list of what to try to fix. Is that correct?
Well, no, I think they wanted marketable product value instead of byproduct.
That was one, and
that was one.
A separately identified issue was capital cost old, and it actually would help us, and Paul's thought about this more. Paul, you go ahead and address that.
I was just going to request perhaps the staff to flesh out a little bit what their thoughts and concerns were with the definition of capital cost old. This was mentioned on the major issues table. The first version of it and the subsequent version of it, and it just I guess I'm interested in what needs fixing there or what concerns you've come across in working these applications in that regard.
I mean, when we're looking at the capital cost old is, okay, if you don't have capital cost old, how are you going to, what are you going to compare with? Because it's a kind of a comparison thing. For example, if you are replacing a new old equipment with a new one, you have old one and you have a new one. So in that case, that equation will work because you have a new one and that. But if you don't have, you're not replacing it, and you just bought a new equipment, how are you going to do that? That was the issues we're looking at that point. Did I answer your question there?
Yes, I think in part, and I think one of the things, as I recall, that was on the major issues table was it mentioned pollution control equipment wasn't included in the definition of capital cost old, and I wasn't sure if that was still a concern or if you had a particular thing you wanted to share with the committee with regard to that comment from the major issues table, or that item listed there.
Yes, to add to that, my recollection was the capital cost old tends to work if it's not a pollution control, if the old is not, if you're not replacing pollution control with a pollution control.
Yeah, correct. I think that we call that comparable. I'm kind of be careful here to know where we are going and all that. We call it comparable equipment. And for example, if you say the one with pollution control and one without pollution control, if you look at that equation, and what about the equipment that is you can use as a pollution control, at the same time you can use it as a process, but they do not have a separate pollution control aspect to it, what are you going to do about that? That's the issues we're talking about there. In other words, you have a process equipment that you can use it as production and pollution control. At the same time, you can use it as pure process. If you compare those two, the cost is going to be the same.
Right, which seems to penalize you for and not get an exemption.
Yeah.
And that would be
the way I've worked through it.
I think that's one example of a situation where we, when we thought about it, where the equation doesn't do what I think the intent of the program is, and not of any fault of the staff. It's just the way that works. And another example of how one size fits all doesn't make much sense. To my earlier comment about examples, you know, I do think we could talk about examples that show where the cap doesn't work. I made reference to that. There's one. But my comment about kind of going towards Cyrus's point about let's look at an example is designed more not to talk about how bad the cap is, but to talk about what are we trying to fix? Can we figure out a fix? And maybe if we have a fix to some of the problem applications or the more tricky applications, we can liberate the staff to use a little bit more engineering judgment across the board on other categories that we don't have a lot of problems in the program. We have some problems, perceived problems in the program. If we can address those with kind of a specific targeted fix to the rules or guidance, like we've already done with at least one category, then maybe we can get to a point where we all would agree that one equation, okay, isn't going to be enough, and maybe over time the commission can develop categorical equations, but maybe there's not so much an urgency to fix that perfect thing now if we fix the thing that the commission perceives is a problem right now, okay? So if it's Herzig's, you know, there's a lot of things on this issues list, like marketable product, like capital cost old, that is the staff's intention to get the kind of guidance in answering those questions, to be able to go back and figure out a way to deal with that type of system. And if it is, let's talk about, you know, whether that would work and what would that look like, so that maybe we can come up with agreement about a fair way to deal with those.
I agree with that. I think that even though the issue is already being decided administratively, I think taking a relevant example like the heat recovery and having a presentation to this board about here's the way it works under current law, here's running one of them through each of the options, would educate me, because I'm not as educated about that specific process as the urban counties or the industry folks are. I need to be more educated on that, and I think it would be a launching off point for not changing that specific issue, but deciding whether we can create an equation that works in the future for other stuff that's going to be similar to that. I'd like to see that. I don't know how complicated that would be for staff to do, but a PowerPoint or something would help me to see how that works.
I mean, one potential is Wayne has already provided us, from his perspective, some examples. Have these cases already been decided? Are these still on appeal, or are these...
I didn't distribute those to absolutely everyone. That was a case that is still pending.
Oh.
And it's the Hersey. And I ran that thing through the existing equation, which again is not very different from option one. It's just option one just had a couple things, and it shows that none of that is pollution control equipment, which I think it should show that, because they were building these things in the 70s for that was their choice, because that made them money. Not they didn't do it for any pollution control reasons,
but it's specifically enumerated in Part B. Correct. Is that, are we talking about the same thing?
No, Hersey's.
Oh, okay.
It's in that something to be considered list that the...
It's from House Bill 3732.
Yeah.
Part B.
Okay,
list.
All right.
But that bill didn't say that you had to exempt those. It said you had to consider them. But they've been doing that since the 70s, because that was the most efficient way to generate electricity, and it was a financial decision, and it was not done for pollution control. Now you could generate more electricity in some cases where, you know, where you had a non-attainment zone or something, but they were building these in places that they didn't have that problem. early on. It was for efficiency.
And what he's talking about, Bob, is there was a bunch of exemptions. They got 100% on one piece of the application, and they got zero on the other piece of the application.
So Wayne, just I don't know if I can I mention specific facilities and what you
well what you have in your hand is public record, so I don't see that there's a problem.
So you, for example, just on tier 3 Borger energy calculation, you ran some numbers and came up with -3%.
And I had to use...
And you were using...
I could not use their actual steam cost because that would have been... how would you call it? Confidential?
My question
is... So I used a number considerably less than...
You were basically using an option one-like formula, right?
But it was the option. It's the old tier three, which was option three.
Oh, it was option
three. But that in an equation, option one are basically the same, except you've changed byproduct to marketable product value.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, I'm going to go ahead and sound like a lawyer here. I really don't think we should talk about specific examples that are pending before the commission.
I agree.
I don't know you're not suggesting it. And so what I think would be helpful, to go to Bennett's idea, is we could have a presentation from staff. And, we could probably draw some similarities to existing cases. But, I think you can make a hypothetical situation that's generic enough to walk through. Okay, so if we did it this way, here's what the outcome would be. If we did it this way, here's what the outcome would be. What is that?
And we could even provide staff with some basic, it's a 300 megawatt.
Yeah.
And they could run it, I don't know, or they could do it.
I agree. Well, I think that would help us get a feel for what we're doing here. I agree with walking through examples of various different scenarios with these
clearly hypothetical scenarios. Right.
So the question would be, in addition to the Herzog example, are there other big ticket items that staff is concerned about? Where would be also helpful to look at some hypotheticals? I mean, here, let me do one that's going to be near and dear to your heart, Mike. There's going to be one of the things on K, and I hope we do this, is the idea of recapturing CO2 emissions and sequestering them. Then the question is going to be, because you're going to have some oil recovery off of the sequestering of that CO2, which might be the same company or might be a different company, is there a way to look at that and say, is this formula going to work for that, or is that a case where this formula really isn't going to work because you may have a different... See what I'm asking?
Right. I think I know where you're going with that. And, the problem is that becomes a value issue again, because if you're enhancing EOR, enhanced oil recovery, through the CO2 sequestration project where you're pumping the CO2 down, you're going to get mineral analysis or mineral valuations, and those mineral valuations are going to be greater because you're receiving more oil. So because of that sequestration, you're going to have an enhanced mineral, and those mineral valuations will go up. So in essence, that income or that whatever you're talking about, through another part of that process, you would have a greater valuation on it than if you didn't have it there at all.
To the valuation piece of it, not the exemption.
But does that mean that extra oil will be taxed? So it doesn't matter that the coal plant that sequestered the CO2 has that marketable product.
To the oil company, that would be an expense of operations. Isn't that right, Bob? I mean, they would pay for the CO2 to be injected into the ground, and you would have an enhanced oil. You'd have an enhanced recovery.
Okay, so really, it would be the value of the CO2.
Correct.
that would have nothing to do with oil recovery. It would be the value. Would you subtract the value of the CO2 sold against the extra, the huge expense you're doing to actually sequester that CO2?
You're mixing apples and oranges here, I believe, Greg. The value, you would have a value to the CO2 in the hands of if you, let's make it simple. You've got a oil production company A, you've got a company that's got the CO2. It doesn't have to be the company that produced the CO2. It could be a third party that's marketing, and they're in the business to sequester it. So at that point, I don't know if you'd have an exemption on it.
And the situation would dictate.
The situation is going to dictate. I don't think you can come up with an answer that's going to fit everything.
And that's why I'm saying about the Tier 3. I mean,
that's right. Yeah. That's right.
We're back to that situation again. It's situation specific.
Of course, the cost to collect all that CO2 is going to greatly exceed the value of the CO2 itself. So it might take a little off the exemption, but it wouldn't take much.
You wouldn't be surprised to hear me say that. I would hope that when we ran that equation, we would value the capturing of the CO2, and the cost associated with the capturing of the CO2 is clearly being an exempt pollution control thing, you know, equipment project. But that example is out there. We can use that as an example. I'd much rather deal with the ones that are in front of us. I think it's not a bad idea, Cyrus. You already heard from me that I think we should be really reticent to be doing this discount of everything we sell when we divert a waste stream, because we could just as easily injected that CO2 into a deep brine aquifer and called it waste. And the fact that somebody found a way to make a market for it shouldn't be discouraged. And so when we build in a tax program, when we talk about an incentive program that was designed to encourage people to be innovative and control pollution, we should not really be creating hurdles to that kind of innovation. I don't think we have to cross that bridge, and I am kind of encouraged that I think we all recognize that we won't be able to define a one-size-fits-all. There might be some accommodation for a case-specific situation where, you know, that guy's in the business of buying and selling CO2. None of his equipment is exempt. But the guy that is in the business of producing power, who's spending $4 billion on a power plant instead of one or two, that's a different story. Okay, so, instead, I think we have a set of issues associated with how do you deal with efficiency improvements. You know, Wayne has one opinion about how these guys have been doing this for a long time. There's another opinion, which is that they, you know, Herzig's provide an environmental benefit, and the commission has grappled with how to calculate that. I think if we went through an example, and toward Bennett's comment, so we could all get our head around what are the issues commission is dealing with, then we might be able to come to some agreement. You know, here's the way you could do that, and if you applied that a methodology, you'd probably come out with 55% every time, or something like that.
You hit on a word that it's near and dear to my heart, and that's efficiency improvement, and which is what a HRSG is—a tremendous efficiency improvement. But I have actually dreamed up cases where, if you're not using common sense and you take the laws the way they are literally, you can get an exemption for putting in fluorescent lighting. And I know that sounds bizarre, but if I'm at a power plant where I'm generating my own electricity and I want to have gas lights, now I know that's arcane and silly, but there's no reason you couldn't have them. Other, you know, there's some safety issues that'd be difficult,
but
not undoable. But you could say, well, these are a lot more efficient. There's a lot less pollution than having the gas lights, so I want my lights exempted. And that bothers me, because that's an economic decision and a convenience decision, not a pollution decision. But yet you can take this other base and say,
I just want to stay away from the absurd. In some of the proposals of industry, not most of them, but occasionally you get one that's, you know, you did that for an economic reason. You come up with a screwball comparison, but you're doing it for an economic reason. You shouldn't get a pollution control exemption for it. And which is why I like the economics. I know you guys don't care for that, but it eliminates some of the absurd.
Wayne, isn't that what the review process and the appeal process is all about, though, as well? I mean,
well, it is, but you can come up with, I plan to do this other thing, and your reasoning can be correct, and it's by the letter of the law, they'd have to grant it. They're not allowed to use common sense. They have to stick to the letter of the law.
But I think then if the appraisal district didn't agree with that finding, then they could protest it and ask
And they would get slammed down when they get heard in this room.
That's right. I mean, if the rule says that you get the exemption, the rule gets the exemption no matter how nonsensical it is. No matter how much against all of our recognition, and we've had that happen over the history of this program, which is we all look at an exemption that goes through under the rules, and we all go, egad. And usually we've gotten sometimes statutory and rule change in response to that, but that exemption is still in place. I would agree the need for this, for us to get to some examples here, to get a handle on this, because we're getting a lot of philosophy here, and I'm hearing some I agree with and some I don't agree with, and I don't know how to make sense of it all, other than I think we need to get to some, you know, examples. For me, having participated in the work group that came up with the cap, at the time, it felt very much like sausage making. It was very much of, we know we now have property that we didn't envision in 1991 or 3 or whenever we did the original bill and program. We no longer are talking about filters on top of smokestacks. So we know what the smokestack is and we know what the filter is. We're now talking about, as we were told, integrated property where the pollution control is integrated with the production process, and you can't distinguish, you know, this hunk of property is pollution control and this hunk of property is production. And we need to come up with a way to differentiate and divide the property between productive property and pollution control property. And the group struggled with it. I see some of the folks that were in this room that were part of that process, and we finally came up with something, and we all looked at each other and said, it looks like that will work. But it felt very much like sausage making. I can support any changes to that and improvements to it that looks like it improves the ability to differentiate between productive property and pollution control property, and allows the staff to go forward on a consistent basis that honors the need for and tax administration of uniformity and equality. I can't tell you what that is, but as we talk through the options, that's what I want to see, and I'm ready to support anything that enhances that, because as most sausage-making processes, you kind of have to taste it to see what tastes better. And you don't know as you put the ingredients in. So I'm very supportive of us getting to a tasting process on the different options.
Okay, before Tim talks, I'd like to comment. I agree. I think we do need to come back to what Mike said earlier, to try to have some examples and try to ask like the problems that we have now. And again, to remind us all, I think we're here this day because of the timing of the rulemaking process. I mean, ideally, I think we'd like to have more time, and we probably will have more time. I can't envision us deciding all this today, but maybe we will. With that said, Tim, do you have any comments?
I just wanted to weigh in, and it's what Mr. Nassy touched on, and specifically with regards to HRSGs. I think everyone here in this room is in agreement that, you know, specific use determination appeals that are ongoing, that's not within this advisory committee's purview. However, we are looking for a way forward on this specific category of applications. Now, while I don't think the merits of, you know, these individual applications that have been submitted and are currently appealed, I don't believe that's should be up for discussion in this committee. However, those applications and those proposed formulas are public record, are on file here, and similarly, in a way that while we weren't discussing the merits of the Valero appeal, those briefs filed provided a good touchstone and a starting point for this advisory committee. I didn't want this advisory committee to think that for some reason those documents that are already public record and those equations would be off limits. If it would assist you in your consideration of how to go forward with HRSGs, then I think that would be well within this committee's purview to look at and examine as far as real world examples of exactly what the agency is dealing with.
So that being said, how time-consuming or difficult would it be to take 10 HRSG applications and apply option 1, 2, and 3 to them and see what we come up with? Would that be an unreasonable totally? I mean, I think if we did one example, it might just be a bad example. I think we probably should do more than one, but I don't know what the right number is.
It's going to give you the same answer. You know, I think also, you know, on those applications that you were talking about, not only though the HRSG was on there, but the steam turbines were also applied for application too. Mm-hmm. And so some of those got 100% and all the steam turbines got 0% on those mm-hmm. applications. So there are some, I mean, right now it's not, there are some got zero, and I think those are under appeal too right now. So,
and to Gregory's point, as the analysis is done, it should be from the start of the process going through the gatekeeping provisions, right, to see if they apply before you get, not just throwing the formula at it, but go through the entire analysis. Is that right?
Sure. So would you want us to pick these particular facilities, or how would we best handle that? Or should we just give discretion and say, you guys pick three and run it through using options 1, 2, and 3 and pick, you know, a little one, a medium-sized one, and a big one just to see if there's any difference? I don't know.
We have a lot of experience with HRSGs and a lot of the information that came in. So we actually might have a basis for actually putting down some costs. But, I mean, as we get into other types of applications and specifically some of those things on K, we really don't have that information to be able to plug that into those applications, quite frankly. So, I hope you can understand what I'm trying to say.
If you're talking about a combined cycle plant, I mean, you can do hypotheticals using EIA data for first cost, operation and maintenance cost, and you'd use the same fuel cost for the two different ones. I can do equation 3 or 1. I mean, that, to me, I think they're basically the same thing. I have a spreadsheet set up for doing those.
But let me ask, if you've already done, you said you worked on a lot of Hersheys. If you've already done these comparisons, would it be reasonable to ask you to pull some of those during a lunch break or something? Not that we're asking you to skip your lunch, but would it be pretty easy to pull and bring back to us? And call it company A, B, and C.
Being familiar with a lot of information that's been submitted during the briefing periods for the Herzigs that are under appeal right now, I think most of that information is information that has been submitted by other parties. So, I mean, that's what we'd be bringing in, is probably what Wayne provided to some of you in the first place.
I was
trying to think of a way for us to get all on the same page in our discussion of this.
I would think it'd be just as easy to say pick a 350 megawatt and a 600 megawatt or something like that. Just pick a generic number and a load. Maybe run it at two or three different load factors. Excuse me, capacity factors, and see what it generates. You don't have to have, if you're gonna get your original cost data and your O&M, you know, from the same basis, which I suggest EIA, and you would just pull a current electric and gas price.
EIA is generally dated a couple of years.
Yeah. But they have an outlook.
Right.
From the, which is based on several years worth of data.
Okay.
I mean, I can run some. I don't have equation two set up, but I could probably do that.
Mr. Chairman, I think it might be helpful to let staff walk us through from the start, from the gatekeeping, and do a more thorough look, maybe next meeting, because I'm sure his numbers on the spreadsheet are correct and mean something to a lot of people, but I'm much more basic than that, and I'd like to see kind of and it could be hypothetical. We don't have, maybe to satisfy the concerns that it's an actual case, just make up some of the numbers and run a Hersig from step one, and staff can show us as an educational function how we go through the gatekeeping functions, go through the cap process now, and then how options one and two would function. So I'm not anxious to see it today. I could wait till next week if it was a more basic, thorough deal. Of course, that's a lot of work for them, so I don't know if that's something they want to address. Or
how much work is it?
I hear you're meeting again.
We're permanent.
There's problems with that. Not that y'all can't meet again, but you, as y'all know, we're moving forward with the rule. Does it mean that you wouldn't have ability to have those discussions and comments on this issue after we propose in the adoption phase? So there may be a possibility just to wait for that proposal to happen, see the rule, and then use that information to have more deliberation on that issue.
I think that's our only choice. I mean, I don't think we today can give you advice on which of these equations are going to work, because I just don't think we know enough. And I know that Michael wants to talk about whether the marketable stuff should come out altogether. I'm not, you know, I need more education on that. So I guess we'll just run out of time for this rulemaking, but we should still.
How hard would it be to give us one example, go back to your office, get some data, run a 250 megawatt combined cycle natural gas plant and show us how the numbers work on that issue? And that would be an issue where the byproduct is actually producing electricity more efficiency. So it's not Mike Nasi's issue. This is an issue where it is production versus pollution control. You know, if you're becoming more efficient, you're selling more electricity. So it's not your issue. So I think we could all agree on this one. Is that something, could you come back after lunch and present it, or is that way too a short time to be?
I'm not sure, but I believe the appraisal districts, that was some of the stuff they passed out in either the second meeting. They had the information that was passed out at that point on the data they have. They have all that data.
But it didn't go through options one and two, right?
Well,
we could use that. But we could use that data as the way to run those numbers, right?
Right.
The appraisal districts, are you talking about TAD, the Association of Appraisal Districts? Who?
Frizzell. They provided that document at the second meeting from your examples.
Does he mean this? I don't know.
Well, that's just one of the. That was just one of the appeals that I gave a couple of people. But I think we want to run something generic. Guys, I'll be happy to. I could change my spreadsheet and add option two to it and run a couple of examples at a couple of different load factors. Once I set it up, it'd be child's play to do several.
I think some of us have that too. I certainly have the current one in my Excel now. And you're talking about option one, trying to run that?
Well, option one is, to me, as far as I can tell, is the same thing as three with...
They're basically the same.
Yeah, they're basically the same with some of the words changed. So I'm saying what I have now is the same as one. I'd have to add the calculations for equation two. But
and again, I remind us.
Instead of us beating it to death here, I could run a few examples and bring them next time.
We just don't know whether to trust you. No, I do trust you, but
you don't know if my calculations are right. I'm just
put it this way: TCQ is the one who's actually going to be running them. I think it would be useful to have your calculation, but okay. I still would like to see TCQ take an example and run through it. But I don't know if that's possible. If it's not possible today, it could also be sent out by email, so at least we can, you know, review it.
I think we can run it for you. You know, if you give us the data or use the existing data, whatever you want. We may not be able to do it today. Depends on what we have going on.
Chan sort of hinted at it, and we're under the gun on the timeline. So, and I know we're past April 1st. So, where are we as having any impact at all in this rulemaking process?
Yeah, we are working against the time, and that is the big issue for us. The timing, we don't have enough time to do everything that we need to do because of our time schedule, like we gave it to you last time.
No, I disagree. I think y'all will have an impact on this rule. It's just y'all might have a bigger picture, a clearer picture after a proposal with the rule language that we have and during the adoption phase. So
we'd have more of an impact or more input in the public hearings section, or is that what you're saying? Because you're going to submit something now in the Texas Register or pretty soon. And then we'll have, where will we have an impact, I guess is what I'm saying, or timeline-wise?
Oh, for right now?
Right.
I mean, we're definitely taking all the deliberations y'all have, that's collectively or individually, and weighing into the rule as we go through this process. If there's areas y'all just can't give us the decision on, we're still don't understand what we're going to incorporate into the rule as well regarding the cap.
Is there a drop dead date that we have to get you something to be?
Well, that's third and first.
That was April 1st.
But I mean, like I said, it's in the management review, and we are in the process of briefing management as well, and they're interested in y'all's input.
So I understand you're saying we'd probably have more impact if we waited until the rule's published. And then came back with.
Well, I mean, just in regards to making a decision, what it is that y'all need to decide. If,
it would be better to wait until the rule is published and come back with it with a committee recommendation, and come give you a committee recommendation now, and then change it after the rule is published.
I'll probably muddy this up completely. I mean, staff has a timeline that we're trying to meet in terms of developing rules and going through the management process. Certainly your deliberations and everything you do, we're going to try to take that into account even as we continue to go forward. Certainly the commissioners are the people that are looking at the rules, and you are primarily providing your advice to the commission, to the three commissioners. So I think any type of continued activity on this issue that you all have, whether or not structurally we're able to incorporate that in the rules by the times we need to, certainly those are things that the commission can take into account in their deliberations on the rules and in their direction to the staff. So, I mean, I'm not sure there is a drop-dead date. We're going to do whatever we can to consider the deliberations that you have, and the commission will have those in order to inform their decision-making.
Mr. Chairman, this is a really important decision process that we're going through. We're debating public policy. Public policy, to me, has to be made up of a lot of common sense and logic. And just because you make a product that fits the criteria here, but it's made to make money, I think we're on a real slippery slope if we're just going to grant exemptions on everything that looks like pollution control and don't look at the possibility that it was made for production purposes. I think that we just need to take a little more time and look at this thing and look at it over a period of time instead of trying to make a decision today. You know, one thing that I'd love to see, and I don't know how to get there, is intent. Why was the piece of equipment placed in the production line? What was presented to corporate? What was presented to make them want to spend a gazillion dollars to put this in there?
Or maybe they didn't want to. Maybe they were required to.
Well, that's fine. Yeah. If that's what they were presented, that's what you had to do. That's fine.
Yeah.
But if they were also presented the facts that they were going to make a bunch of money out of it, I'd love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the intent is, does it meet or exceed an environmental rule, law, regulation? I don't think we can get to intent.
I understand that.
I should have clarified earlier that anyone that, especially those of you that have filled out the forms, if you want to speak now or anytime you think it's appropriate on a particular subject, feel free to approach the podium and we'll take the comments. And if you fill out one and you change your mind and decide not to, it's fine too. It's okay. It's like they know who they are.
In addition to the Herzog, whatever you say, that example, would there be another example that we'd want to see? You know, the Herzog is an example where you're producing a more efficient process, producing more electricity, and therefore we definitely should deduct that additional production. But what about this question that Mike's getting at, where you're not in the business of, you know, producing CO2 for oil recovery, or, you know, sulfur, whatever the example is. Is there a way to look at an example like that and run some numbers and, you know, kind of, I don't know what the right example is, but see how it changes if we do what you'd like to do, which is say you only subtract the additional production if that's your business model, versus you have an extra, you know, you have a recycling operation, you're preventing it from going to waste. Or do it landfill or whatever. I mean, is there an example? What's the perfect example of that we could run and say, well, we may not want to apply this kind of formula because we're actually hurting recycling efforts or whatever. I don't know. What would the example that be that we could run?
I'll let you talk. The example Mike mentioned, it's quite complicated. You can imagine with a $4 billion project, you have a lot of items that would fit under Part A, and then you would take the leftovers, and it'd be...
I think maybe a more constructive thing would be, and that's kind of why I thought we should talk about the category that seems to be presenting current problems, because where I think the solution will come in preventing this disincentive, non-word, for recycling is in the definition of byproduct. I think we can fix this problem by keeping it out of the cap. But I want to make sure I hear what the staff's going for in its conversion of the byproduct definition to a definition of marketable product, so that when we revise that definition, we don't do violence to what you're all trying to accomplish. Because I think there's some things that need to change in that definition that can address the no-brainer categories that maybe we could all agree on. Maybe not, but there's probably some way to revise that definition to be a little bit more clean, to leave for further discussion things like steam and hot air, but take out things like clearly waste products, okay, so that we've gone to a landfill and filled up a landfill if they weren't recycled. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for, is to, by understanding what we're trying to fix and maybe thinking about what it needs to, you know, talk about the Herzig's issue here. I mean, I've heard a lot of discussions. I'd like Bennett to hear, okay, so how do you view these things, these byproducts? And are they really byproducts, or are they co-products, and, you know, these kinds of things?
I hear what you're saying, and if I understand what you're saying, you're thinking about removing byproduct altogether from the cap, either byproduct or marketable product. Is that?
I'm okay with actually keeping it in, but I think we should narrow the definition to what we really need to be aiming for when we talk about deducting something. That's really what I'm getting at. I'm willing. My preference would be to remove it, Bennett, but I'm willing to talk about if we can craft it in a way that we all agree that has its purpose, we can keep it in the cap.
Why isn't the production of something that you sell production?
Well, it's not production if it was the generation of a waste that would go into a landfill and you just figure out a way to find a market for it and recycle it, which is in and of itself a pollution control act.
Well, what about something that used to be something you landfilled and now its use is mandated by a state agency?
That example, I mean, I think it's tied to, I think the byproduct definition should be tied to the material would be regulated as solid waste but for the sale, but for the beneficial use. It would be regulated as an air pollutant but for its sale.
Oh, exclude byproducts like gasoline.
No, because And I actually have thought about your concern about, you know, if your byproduct production gets into the business of being your business, okay? I think we can protect that. I think the use of NAICS codes, industrial classifications, if you look at the industrial classification for petroleum refining, Don, you look and it's not just gasoline. It's a bunch of byproducts, okay? So as gasoline became not only a byproduct but the primary product, this classification system is the way that the TCEQ and many programs relies upon to figure out what is it, what business are you in?
So I'm a kerosene producer, and I produce my kerosene. I got a byproduct of gasoline, and I'm disposing of it, and I apply for my exemption from TCEQ. TCEQ grants it for me. I've got your code that tells that I'm a kerosene producer. And 10 years later, my kerosene, I'm, you know, do whatever with, but I'm making all my money off my gasoline. And when does that ever come back to TCEQ? I've got I've got a positive use determination that's filed with the tax assessor, with the appraisal district, that must be honored. When does that get reviewed again?
I think we should talk about a change to the definition of byproduct that would say that if your business shifts out of your classification code that you represented on your application, that's a sworn statement when you file an application with this commission about what your SIC code or NAICS code is. If your business changes out of that, I think we should clarify that you're under a requirement. It's like your comment about if the use changes. Okay, this is if your business changes. And the petroleum refining thing is fixed. The NAICS code, 324110 includes kerosene, gasoline, and a bunch of other things that you guys would agree are their business.
So the appraisal district is going to get a positive use designation for this property as long as the owner has a, what do you call it, code?
And the application that they submit to the TCEQ identifies their NAICS classification for their industry.
And so the appraisal district would deny that it would no longer recognize the positive use determination if your code differs from what your original application and determination was under.
I think that would be a good reason to revisit it.
And we do it through rulemaking at the TCEQ. And my concern about that is I'm not sure rulemaking at TCEQ tells appraisal districts what they can and cannot do. We've got a statute right now that tells the appraisal district they must honor the determination that is received from the TCEQ. I like your solution in a way. I like an aspect of the solution. I'm not sure it's perfect for what we're dealing with, but I like your willingness to go back to the legislature and open up this concept that that once determinations are made, they can never be reviewed.
Well, I'm not suggesting they be reviewed. I'm suggesting that if you misrepresent something or if you represent something that changes, ownership changes are a perfect example. If you have a new owner, you have to come back in. Okay? If your industrial classification changes,
but that's because
you would have to come back in.
The law tells the appraisal district to honor the determination for that owner and for that property.
Well, then, do they have to file the local application that comes out of this? Is that on an annual basis or is that a one-time app? Can you require it as a chief appraiser to file annually on that? Annually? No?
No.
It didn't work.
Well, my point is like a many of the agency's programs. The applicant is bound to the representations it makes, okay? It will have been... I don't believe it's possible for us to fix what the powers and authorities of the appraisal districts are. I do think it's possible for us to fix that the commission, when it said that this positive use determination is right with the law, it was relying upon these facts. And if those facts change, it undermines it.
But what's the mechanic of changing it then? Is it TCEQ or is it through the appraisal?
The TCEQ's rules require applicants to come in when ownership changes, correct? I mean, if you want an application for equipment,
it
you
change ownership. It doesn't.
They wash their hands.
It doesn't. When ownership changes, the appraisal district no longer has to honor the designation.
Right.
The new owner can do nothing or can file for something new. But my point is that the statute allows them to no longer honor the designation. Right now, though, it conversely tells them to honor the designation as long as it's in place by that owner for that property used that way.
For that classification system. We could say that.
The statute could say that.
Right. The agency could say that.
The agency,
doesn't govern the appraisal
agency can't adopt rules that contravene a statute.
But they could qualify the positive use determination.
I like the concept of us amending the statute to do that.
I don't like the idea of amending the statute. I'm willing to maximize the commission's authority to qualify its positive use determination.
But see, that's only up front. Once your code changes 8 years later, okay. I think the TCEQ's out of it. How does it then tell the appraisal district what to do 8 years past? Am I missing something?
I'm not suggesting that they would. I'm suggesting that it's a promise. It's a condition of the thing, and you would basically be in violation of the tax code if you're an applicant that altered that representation without going back before the commission.
Gentlemen, my name is Bernardo Garcia with the appraisal district. This is an interesting and very serious issue because of what you guys are talking about is that there is no enforcement procedure. Once TCEQ grants it, it takes the appraisal districts out of the loop. You then put the appraisal districts in being or attempting to police what these companies are doing. And we have very little information. They're not required to answer any of our letters. Since it's exempt, if we attempt to take the exemption off, we'll get whacked the way Travis CAD recently got whacked for not honoring a TCEQ exemption. So that puts us in a very awkward position. If you want to say that the exemption is no longer valid after a certain number of years, sort of like abatements, that might be workable, where you grant them a provisional exemption for 5 years so that the appraisal district can docket that and say after 5 years you've got to reapply. But when you talk about change of ownership, you know, we have a situation right now, I'm not going to say the name of the company, but where one company sold their pollution control widget to another, they came to TCQ and just had the name changed, and then come running to the appraisal district and see, okay, we got the name changed, here's our positive use determination. But guess what? They don't qualify. So there has to be something in the rules that allow TCEQ to tell the appraisal districts, you know, there's been a change here, these people need to requalify, this exemption ends. But that procedure isn't there, because once they get their positive use determination, it lasts forever. And the appraisal district, when we send people out to value the properties or to inspect them, we may be able to determine whether or not their code has changed, but they're under no requirement to tell us. And that's the eight ball that we're behind on this issue, that we can't tell. And the property owner, even though they say, I solemnly swear this is what I'm doing, there isn't a single district attorney in Texas that I'm aware of that will actually indict a corporation for filing that kind of a false statement. There isn't, folks. It just doesn't exist. I mean, it's a nice concept. They swore to it, but there's no way to police it. There's no way to enforce it. And there simply is no way for the appraisal districts to attempt to put on the policeman's hat and monitor that.
What was the basis for the denial of exemption in Travis County? What was that all about?
Travis County just got the TCEQ letter and said we don't think it's pollution control and we're not going to abide by it.
Was there a basis?
No, there wasn't any basis. They just decided they weren't going to do it. It came out in the paper. I can get you the court case. It's embarrassing. But the appraisal district was saying we can't take this value loss. We don't think it was one of these issues that what this company did was like, well, they have to do that in order to operate this company, so that's part of their business. And they just took issue, umbrage, if you will, with TCEQ's determination and decided not to follow it. And they got whacked over, I think, almost $100,000 in penalties for not abiding by TCEQ's determination. But, you know, there's just no enforcement provision there. Good concepts, gentlemen, but no enforcement. It puts the appraisal district behind the eight ball, which by implication puts the taxpayers behind the eight ball. But, you know, whether TCEQ can make these changes without the legislature, I do have some concerns about that, just speaking as an old government lawyer. But it may be difficult to do that. It may not be feasible. You know, it may be subject to some challenge.
Thanks. And Mike, I mean, he's voicing my concern from our understanding of how the law works. I mean, if we came to agreement that this was a solution that made sense for us, I'm not sure we're there yet. I'd want to hear from TCEQ's lawyers and the appraisal district lawyers that, yeah, that's the law supports us doing that. But I also got to say, I'm struggling with the concept that there is productive property used to produce a good or service that is tax exempt under this program.
Yeah, it's just a deference of opinion about what good and service is. I mean, I think that, and I'm not suggesting we breathe life into the commission's authority or try to change that process. I'm saying that we have a rulemaking before us. This committee has the ability to input on it. We have an existing definition of byproduct that one of the concepts is maybe changing it to the term marketable product. And we have a chance to make that the best definition possible. And if we find out through going through these Herzig-type examples that tweaking that definition might actually create some split-the-baby solutions for that fact scenario, great. I would also, and I'll just tell you, My opinion is, legally, without compromise, that any material that would be regulated as a waste that is diverted away from a landfill or from emission to the air is exempt. The pollution control equipment exemption is unqualified. And these evaluations about economic benefit down the road when somebody, after that installation, figures out a way, to me, the statute just doesn't support trying to speculate down the road. It's all an initial determination. I'm willing to entertain a discussion of how we get behind what somebody's original intent was. Fair question. Okay, but I'm talking about that evolutionary process. All I did by teeing up the NAICS example is try to fashion a way to solve your concern that it could change in the future. I don't believe the statute provides a basis for the commission to speculate when an application is filed what might change in the future. It's exempt or it's not. It's waste or it's not.
Or it's production or it's not.
It's production. There's a production aspect to that material or it's not. And in the future, if they figure out a way to divert a waste stream away from a landfill and sell it, okay, that's really not, shouldn't be part of the equation. I would submit the statute doesn't support the interpretation of the cap as it's currently conceived to think forward about a market, okay? I'm just trying to say if we're going to fix this definition to try to address some of the things that are before us, I'm willing to entertain something in this rule. For a later discussion in the legislature or elsewhere, we could have these other policy debates. But in this rule, I think that we could probably come to some agreement that there's some category of material that shouldn't be considered a marketable product and deducted as part of the cap without doing violence to y'all's interest in making sure that production intended equipment is not exempt. Okay, I mean, I think that there's just a big wide disparity between things that are increases in efficiency couched in pollution control and pollution control projects that actually have efficiency benefits.
Mike, what are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you know, combined cycle units, okay? I think we can have a good conversation about, you know, whether or not the pollution control benefit from those types of operations, okay, outweighs the production benefits associated with the installation of that equipment. At the time of installation, you can do an analysis, come up with an equation to figure out what that percentage should be. I think we've created this byproduct thing as a way to try to get at that solution, and I think it creates this risk of discouraging, you know, waste recycling. Okay, if you have another situation, I mean, steam and hot air are not things that would fill up a landfill. Okay, steam and hot air wouldn't necessarily result in air pollution under the Texas Clean Air Act. Okay, the pollution that equipment might reduce would be a pollution benefit. And so we could go into an analysis of whether that outweighed the production benefit and the original intent. But in other situations...
And that would be whether or not they were using the steam and selling it off-site for cogeneration, or they were using it within their same
I think
process.
That's something we need to talk about when we talk about this example, for sure. I don't want to get the cart before the horse, because I think Bennett's idea of taking it from the very beginning and understanding what that application looked like and who's buying what from whom for what reason... I'm willing to have that discussion. I just think, you know, we should set aside the different set of circumstances where somebody is got a waste product that they've got on their hands and they're keeping it from being disposed. And it would be a harm to the environment if disposed. And that's why it's regulated as a solid waste under the Solid Waste Disposal Act.
And I'm trying to think of what the, if we took the cap now, and let's say byproduct had never been in there, and it was just, what you're left with then is capital cost new versus capital cost old. That can't work. And I think that was the reason, I'm trying to recall back when we negotiated this cap. I think the thinking is that we're trying to price really what we're doing with this equation, processes that aren't discrete pollution control, like Don said earlier. It's a combined process. And it's unrealistic to just say, capital cost new, capital cost old, because there's not capital cost old in a lot of cases. And I think the byproduct exception is a built-in discount that helps us get at the intent. It's deciding, it's saying, look, at some point you create, at some point you're creating so much byproduct, it's helping you determine that the capital cost old structure doesn't work. It's another way of getting at that. And like Don said, it was sausage making. But I can't see taking that out and just trying to have an equation that says capital cost new, capital cost old. It's not going to, it's just, I don't see how that functions.
And again, my recommendation is not to delete it. It's to revise the definition to target what we're talking about and not create disincentives. Right now, the byproduct definition, too broad.
Which it, would take it out for some applications.
Well, which would functionally take it out for some, but that's exactly the kind of, why we asked the first question, right? Do we have to have the same cap for everybody? Well, if we all agree that we're probably going to have to tailor some situations, this is the way you do it. And the most efficient way is you look at the definition of byproduct and you say, here's what we're talking about. We're talking about things that have some value, things that wouldn't necessarily be solid waste or air pollutants. Okay, they might be valuable. They might be beneficial to be removing, but you know, I think you could, in fact, I will come back to our next meeting or maybe during lunch, I'll mark up a definition of byproduct to show you what I'm talking about so it's not an academic discussion, because I think you could change some words to keep the byproduct deduction in the cap in a way that we all could agree without it hurting these other types of recycling efforts.
And again, I think one of the biggest issues that we were talking about earlier, Bennett, is that all these other steps to get to that tier three, if you take that out, and just like you said, if you're just looking at that formula and not looking at anything else or any of the information that's submitted with it, how do you get there? Because I think that's the biggest problem. If you just look at the formula and you take out everything else that's submitted with that formula to justify getting to that process, I don't get there either. If I'm just looking at the formula, there has to be some other knowledge or information that's given in order to get us there. And it's not, I know, Don, you were saying it's sausage making, and it is. And I'm sure that was a reason at that time for when that formula was used, but there's a lot more stuff. It looks like it's coming down the pike, just like in Part B. And I don't know what that's going to be in the future. I really don't. But I just don't want to limit us to that if there's other ways to get there.
Well, I'm going to look at examples of where it doesn't work and then solutions that better distinguish between productive property and pollution control property. But I'm hesitant. I haven't been shown yet, really, about this concept that there is the ability to produce a good or service and it's not productive property.
Can I interject real quick? I think what he's getting at, and I hesitate restating him. For example, we went at the site issue. We addressed it. Now we're going after the HRSG issue. HRSG, and this is one way.
I think it's much broader than I think it's much broader than HRSGs.
I do too. I'd be curious to where do you think it would.
Let me throw you a completely different example throughout HRSGs. When they first started putting either bag houses or electronic precipitators on coal plants, that was all waste. That was 100% pollution. I'd agreed with that back then. Now, when the Department of Transportation for the state of Texas builds anything in concrete, something like 24% of the mix or 20% of the mix has to be fly ash. So when somebody builds a coal plant in Texas now, and they're figuring their economics, they're going to include the sale of the fly ash when they're making their economic decision to build a plant. And that's an economic decision, not a pollution control decision.
Sounds like it's both. Sounds like it's required, but it's getting economic benefit.
But you're going to figure it when you're doing the economics for your facility. So, and I think this is a good vehicle for that kind of situation. Now, when they first started making them and nobody knew that it was going to be a requirement, I mean, you would have gotten a complete exemption.
It's not a requirement of the generator. It's a requirement of the marketplace. They could buy that ash in California if they actually used coal in California. They could buy that ash anywhere. Okay, the reason that TxDOT requirement evolved, okay, as a market pollution prevention policy, which is totally what it's designated as, that's where it originated, Wayne. That came from the fact efforts by generators to get fly ash marketable, marketing, fly ash marketers, okay, have you developed a market, which, by the way, goes up and down, out and over. I mean, the same power plant cannot
qualify. I understand how it was marketed. But the reason it's in there is to prevent a disfavorable chemical reaction in the concrete, which makes it fall apart, and the fly ash prevents that problem.
Right, and not every generator of ash is going to produce spec ash for that purpose. I mean, there's different classifications. I mean, my point is that material isn't, you know, it is going to be a waste product out of that process, okay? It's going to be landfilled. If there's a market, it is attempted to be recycled. Some folks don't have the ability to recycle it because the classification of the material doesn't meet a specification. That's exactly the kind of example where we don't want to create an incentive for them to say, you know what, I'm not going to improve that material in any way. I'm just going to fill up a landfill. Because, it costs money to move product and to improve the specifications of it. So, I mean, there is an example where I would absolutely say that even though that material has found a market in some situations, that is a waste that is being diverted from a landfill.
Nearly every coal plant I've been to sells almost all their fly ash.
That is I represent that industry, and I wish that were true, Wayne.
Okay.
Almost all, the national number is below 50%. The state number is a little bit above 50%. We want it to be 100%. It's definitely a pollution control goal that I think everybody would share. But the fact that we're sitting here having a debate about whether if it were a higher percentage that would create less of a tax incentive is exactly the problem, as we're creating a disincentive to do the pollution control. I mean, if we want to make 100% recycling, is somebody going to make the additional investment to make that happen if they know that additional investment is going to be discounted because they've created that market?
Well, I still think the equation is good because you bring that to the table and say, we don't know if we'd be able to market it. It's not a marketable product.
Again, and we can go right back to the first example that was brought up today. Is it a marketable product today? Tomorrow? The market may change, the ash may change, the coal seam may change. I mean, the problem with the cap, when you include those kinds of things in the definition, is that you're crystal balling the future and the conditions will change. I'm okay with talking about heat, steam, things that, are different, that wouldn't create an environmental problem if they weren't diverted. I will just tell you that I think, I believe the statute is about pollution control, and I think recycling efforts are about pollution control. And I don't want that to be abused to create a problem for situations where you guys would have a good argument that people are deriving a product, that you're producing a good or a service. But if you're producing a waste and figuring out a way to recycle it, I just don't think that's on the table.
Well, it gets to the definition of waste versus a good or service. And I understand your criticism of the cap, but I think it's actually a criticism not of the cap, but of the program as a whole. The program as a whole does not allow for the exemption to follow changes in technology and market conditions once it's granted. The program as a whole says once a determination is made, no matter how circumstances change, unless it's change of ownership or change of use, the determination is in place and must be honored. And I see that as a weakness as well, but I don't think it's specifically a weakness of the CAF, it's a weakness of the program as a whole. And
I think the program works.
I'd love to address that.
Well, I think the program works because when you're making a decision about whether to install a piece of equipment and you outlay that capital cost, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, is it driven by pollution control? And if it is, then it's providing a benefit to the whole. The idea of this statute is you're providing a benefit to society generally, and so we're not going to tax you additionally because you did that.
That's right. That's right. So I spend $100 million on a piece of equipment to clean my process, produces a waste product, okay? So I take that waste product out of my product, whatever, I capture that waste product. I don't put it in the air anymore. Spend $100 million on that. We lock that in, and that property, we say, we don't want the value of that plant to go up by $100 million because we made them put that property in, right? And we've all agreed with that. 10 years later, that $100 million investment is worth $1 billion because that byproduct became extremely valuable. And that's that is a problem with the program as it exists now. But we have to,
how common is that example that you gave, that it becomes so much more?
I think it can become more common if we design the program to allow it.
Well, I know we're talking about philosophy here, but there's a lot to be said for predictability of having an exemption if you're investing the capital to put it in and someone gets a positive use determination often before they even decide to commit that capital. There's a lot to be said for the predictability of that exemption going forward, that it is pollution control because that was intent.
And that's why we have a program that has this flaw in it. But what I don't want to do is expand the flaw.
No, I agree. And that's what if your primary purpose changes like what you're saying, then you would think there would be these NAIC codes that you would have to requalify under because that's required. And that becomes your primary purpose, and therefore you don't qualify.
That's kind of why I was going down that road. I mean, we can talk kind of offline about what the right legal fix is in terms of enforceability, but as long as what we're trying to do is develop what I think is a credible way to recognize what I believe to be an extraordinarily rare, if it ever exists, example where somebody's waste product becomes their main product. Or, kerosene and gasoline is a great example.
It can still be a waste product. I use that example not to say I want to address that example. I use that example to represent the flaw of trying to look at whether it's waste product or not. It's why I like the staff's recommendation to go to marketable product, because I think the legislature in the statute 11.31 envisions property that has both, that produces a good and has pollution control benefit, and they simply say TCQ come up with a way to distinguish between the two, and I think there just needs to be a way to do that, and I don't think it looks to primary productive purpose or secondary or waste product productive purpose. It's either a productive property, which means it's producing a good, or it's not.
Right. And generation of waste is not producing a good, period.
Right. So if it produces a waste, and it's purely a waste, and you can't market it,
that qualification is not in the statute. I mean, if you generate that material, the pollution control is you're not putting it in a hole in proximity to groundwater. You're moving it away from there and putting it in some place that's cleaner. The very act of recycling is pollution control. So how can we say that creating a market to make recycling happen disqualifies the project?
I do think it is in the statute.
I mean, I think it's, does it, is it an environmental rule require the material to be captured? Yes. Okay. And then does it have an environmental benefit? Yes. And is it a production of a good or service? No.
If you can sell it, it's a good or service.
It's a good if you can sell it.
It's a waste.
It's a good or service if you can sell it.
It's a waste if you have to pay to dispose of it.
it's pollution control equipment, period.
I know we have a philosophical difference on this one, and so what I think, what I'm getting at is, I think that much tougher call, I'll even concede it's a tougher call, although I obviously don't think it's a tougher call, can be put aside, and we could address the more clear categorical issues where we might be able to reach agreement. It's much like the last set of facts that we're grappling with. If we think that Herzogs have a solution we can come up with, it doesn't involve that issue, in my opinion. I think that's a clearly different issue. I think Cyrus agrees. I think we can fix the Herzog issue without having to go into that tougher
test. I'm not sure this applies to Herzogs, but
I think the one of the examples.
Well, my problem is I'm afraid your fix for Herzogs is going to do this other that we don't want to necessarily agree with.
Well, I would definitely agree that we should take the issues up separately.
Well, okay, but
hence the cap doesn't fix all.
Yeah, I mean,
we can come up with a better uniform set of rules that can be applied to go through that improves our principles I laid out earlier. Then I'm all for it. But if it means identifying a good that's sold on the market, no matter any other reason, and saying that that's not a good that's sold on the market and that's not productive property, I'm going to have trouble getting there what I know now. I mean, I'm always going to listen, but if we're selling a good on the marketplace, aren't we producing a good? How are we not producing a good if we're selling the good on the marketplace?
What happens if you sell it one year and you don't sell it the next year? It's a waste.
Back
to that problem.
Exactly, which is a problem with the entire program. And if we want to address that program, man, you've got 1,000% of my effort to help you with that. Because that is a problem with this program, that we don't review exempt status of property except one point in time.
Now, back on the primary product, if you don't make money off your primary product for one or two or three years, you go out of business. If you don't make money off your recycled product, it's not going to cause you to go out of business. It's just, you're just not going to make that. That's not the decision maker in why you're there.
It's also not the decision maker if you get a pollution control on it or not. Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's time for lunch.
I was about to say that. I don't know if I should take this up, or we're going to hopefully not lose anybody after lunch. But to give you a heads up, and under old business, I would like to take up at the site issue that the TCQ staff, what they submitted. If you have any comments on it, and I don't know at this point if our comments would matter, but it aired that a little bit.
I was just reminded to let that we will be presenting an example to you after lunch on the example using the current cap.
Okay.
Maybe that will help.
And Bob, we never approved the minutes.
No, we did not. I thought we voted on it.
We did some
contingent on them making the
statement. Oh, that was included in that motion.
Right,
okay.
Right. All right, 1:15. Is that too long? 1:00. Think we can do 1:00?
That's fine.
Okay.
So, the best thing we would have done is, if it were just a simple combined cycle, if they're actually selling.